I got a bone to pick. I don't want you monkey mouth motherfuckers sitting in my throne again. Welcome, bienvenue, à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, aka Le Grand Papa B, aka Gaston Lucien Lebanon. Keep track, keep focusing. Today's episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on this date, April 21st, 2025. Happy belated 420 to those who commemorate. Today's episode is rated R and F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record labeling as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. This podcast may not be for you. Okay, before I continue, I need to acknowledge the heartbeat of this thing of ours, this interaction, this podcast thing of ours, and that's all you listeners. So applaud yourselves. And if this is your first time listening, welcome. My hope is that I say something in this episode that resonates and allows us to make history or something like that. Or be pals. You know, I'll settle for being pals or being friends or being a connection. I mean, if we become pals, I guess we're making history, right? All right, okay. Maybe not the kind of history that makes the book, but focus. All right, okay. Today's episode titled 258. The working title is either Elevator Pitch or I Need to Work on My Elevator Pitch, something like that. But I'm going to talk about my recent trip to Montreal, why this podcast episode is late, and how I need to, and the realization that I need to work on my elevator pitch. And before we do that, before we get to that, we're going to start with some quotes and a bit of randomness. All right, let's go. All right, this episode is blossoming. Okay, let's start. Okay, today I only have one quote, which is kind of interesting. Whatever, let's go with the flow. And it goes, if you deeply observe, everything is your teacher. Amen. And that's from the Buddha. The Buddha bless. The Buddha. No, pas le Bundao. The Buddha. Yeah, don't get it twisted. That last part was for my fellow Haitian Creole speakers out there. I mean, it was a dumb joke, but, you know, it's on my family. That's what counts. All right, let's start with some randomness. Okay, in order, right? I'm going to start with this one, the 420 episode. Funny story, gang. This episode was meant to be recorded yesterday, but as a celebrator and as a man who commemorates and recognizes 420, I partook. And I'm like making myself laugh now that I think about it, is the idea was I was going to record an episode high. And you know what happened? I got high and neglected to do the other part, hit record. No, that's not true. I did start to hit record. And I remember feeling lazy. I remember I'll tell you what, I'm going to play a sample of what I haven't heard it myself, but I'm going to play a sample and a rough cut. This is the rough cut, but I'm not going to publish it. Ain't no way in hell I'm publishing this motherfucker. Just a second. Let me just get myself organized. Find the, where did I record it? I got a bone to pick. I don't want you. I can't pronounce that. Okay, there it is. Okay, here it goes. Okay, I'm going to play it. Again, this is a rough cut. See how it sounds. I was going to go to class. Oh, I can't play that. Oh, that's right. Okay. It's a new tradition I have. Before I record, I play music. And then I start the episode. And, yeah, I can't play the music because I'll get taken down from YouTube. So I'm just jumping. I didn't edit. That's the point. This is not an edited version. So I'm going to jump to the part where I start talking. Nope, not here. That's the brat with Bone Thugs and Harmony. I was trying to think off the top of my head, weed songs. Wake up out of dream, grab a light, something. Okay, that's another one. Okay, here we go. Mighty fine. Okay. Lane, I want you in my lane. Jeez, 2025. I felt so mellow. Okay, hold on a second. Lane, I want you in my lane. You a lane. Check this out.
All right, let's give this a try, okay? I don't see this being positive.
You cannot talk.
Take it. I'm so mellow.
Welcome. Bienvenue. I ain't no episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B, a.k.a. Gaston Labrador.
All right, I'm not going to play it. But I do remember feeling a different kind of energy while recording it. And throughout the episode, I did have a weed lollipop at the same time. But I remember I was going to joke about how, yeah, I'm not feeling this shit, man. These edibles ain't shit. And all I know is I was like, oh, wow, 5 minutes. Yeah, five. Okay, so I recorded for 5 minutes. And at the end of 5 minutes, I was like, fuck this shit. the lazy. So it's not a legit episode. All this to say that today's episode was supposed to come out yesterday, but I got high. And then, so today is a legit, April 21st is a legit episode. All right. Okay. So I tried. Yeah, it's funny how in my mind I picture myself doing an episode high, and then when I go to do it, I don't want to do it anymore. Stay in school, kids. Don't do drugs. Don't say coke and freebase unless you got some. All right. Okay. So I'm going to go personal before I go into random news stuff, news items, right? So digital tinkering news. For those who don't know, this is it's a little hobby of mine, and essentially what I do is I code, I look for reasons to write a program, but I use AI to do it. And personally, I feel like I'm getting in front of this whole AI thing is, I know a lot of people think it's going to replace programmers. Nah, you still need the brain behind the program to write the program. Like, it can write the program. But you still need the human being to look at the problem, break it down, and go, okay, I need a program that does X, Y, Z. And also, it also helps if you understand programming, so when the shit doesn't work, you can speak to it, to the AI, OpenAI, logically, as opposed to just saying, hey, it doesn't work. Sorry, I work with people who, it's not just work with people, but I remember when I was in school and studying like informatics, computers. And one thing you learn is how to be specific in your language. It's not enough to just say, hey, the shit doesn't work, or the shit's just giving me an error. It's like, I want to be some fucking specific. At what point? What's working and what's not working? Be able to decipher, make those distinctions. And it's interesting how some people who are in IT who can't do that, but that's a different story. But anyway, whatever, man. I'm just going to summarize. I wrote a piece of code called, I wrote a program. times are changing. essentially, when I'm done recording, I just launch this program, and what it does is it keeps track of the episode. It is essentially sets up my folders for the next episode. And it's just a way to keep track of my episode numbers. I was doing it manually, but you know, now I've automated that process. And I'm nerding out. Like, I'm warning you, to your listeners, this is like about to see some nerd shit. Like, I even have a README file, a GitHub account to store my code so that it's a backup. keep a backup. And also, it was just an excuse for me to understand how GitHub works and why people use it. And I didn't buy a laptop. I was thinking on going to my trip to Montreal, buying a laptop. And I say end them a lot. And I didn't do it because I'm being financially responsible. I'm trying to get out of this bad habit of doing impulse purchases because, at this rate, I'm going to be someone's slave. Yeah, Royal Bank is going to say, huh, can't pay us back. Visa and Royal Bank are going to be, can't pay us back. Well, your name is Toby from now on. Kunta Kinte, Toby. All right. Yeah, man, just nerding out. Hold on, let me get the summary from OpenAI. I actually told it I was going to write. It goes, GitHub automation in place. That's right. Episode launcher is fully working. I don't know if I want to share this code. Would it be useful for someone else? I don't know. If you want to adopt my way of doing, preparing for an episode. But yeah, this is mainly for me. All right. Templates copied. That's okay. Episode versioning locked in and a readme. All right. I'm a little bothered at AI, try to speak my language. I feel like I'm talking to a white person who's like, yo, 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 because that's how you people talk. It's like, yeah, I know you're trying to be like close, but I'm a little insulted, buddy. All right. Digital tinkering news. That's it for now. Okay, let me go into some news shit here. When I listen to podcasts, I tend to get inspired to speak about something that they said. But in this particular, I'm going to focus. There's several episodes that I've listened to, but I'm going to focus on one. And that's an episode of The Black Guy Who Tips, who, by the way, man, these guys have a budget these days, man. Like, they've made improvement. They've made some changes to their layout. And you can tell, they got white people working for them. That's fucked up. They got people working for them here. Black Guy Who Tips. Sorry, I can't chew gum and walk at the same time, so I'm focusing on, right, so the episode is the site changed, them niggas, they just got a new logo, and it's, things are different. Oh, shit, okay, focus. Yes, episode 3082, Kendrick turned Drake into a streamer. And, there's a lot that are talked about in this episode, but I'm going to focus on the part about, Peppa Pig. I'm going to focus on the part they said about Drake. Look, I'm going to put this in the comment section, right? Drake has taught us how not to lose. That's an interesting way of wording it, right? But how to make a loss worse. I was thinking about how, you know, going in high school, I was never like the athletic person, the A student. So I was used on being the guy who doesn't win. And sure, it got to my self-esteem, but it never occurred to me that my attitude towards losing was better than some of the people who I considered winners, who have never lost, who have never taken an L before. There is such a thing as being, not just being a sore loser, but making it, loss is one thing, but it's not the end of the world, but turning a loss into the end of the world. I'm saying all this, and I'm going to link the episode to in the show notes. It just had me thinking about how, Drake, so apparently Drake is so fucked up, like he's still trying to sue, I don't know who he's suing now, still trying to sue people over, yo, Kendrick is not that great, you guys are making him popular, and how Drake seems to be turning into a streamer now. Like, instead of battling Kendrick with rap songs, he's like going on stream sites of motherfuckers in the manosphere. And look at me, like, am I lecturing? It sounds like a lecture. This is more a talk about how, this is some words of wisdom for you youngsters out there, man. There is such a thing worse than losing, and that's your response to that loss. His loss is so bad. The way he's handling this loss is so bad. He's making Meek Mill's look good. Meek Mill's took an L to Drake. He was the butt of all jokes, but he came back. I mean, I'm not a fan of his social media presence, but he came back looking better than Drake looks right now. And again, this is just a message about, it's less about Drake. I don't know him as a human being. It's more about how to handle, I mean, the way you handle a loss. I guess I should be saying that to myself. I mean, yeah, I guess my attitude towards a loss is just, okay, I'm used to it. It's normal. As opposed to, okay, how can I improve or how can I face the music better or not letting the loss, like, you know, depress you and be like, I ain't shit, whatever. But yeah, but wow. Wow, wow, wow. Okay, last bit of news, and this has just been on my mind and I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about it, right? But until a content creator on, make sure I hit record. A content creator, I forget his name, but I'll bring it up after I play his message. And this is a message about Kilmer Abrego Garcia. He's the guy in the United States who was accidentally sent to, yo, that's fucked up, man. He was accidentally sent to a prison to El Salvador. Because why? Because someone fucked up on his paperwork. They assumed he was in the country illegally, so they deported the poor guy. And the PSA I'm about to play just helped me think about why this story gets to me. It's like, I'm not related to him. I don't know him. But the only thing, for those of you, when you hear the name Kilmer Abrego Garcia and the way his situation is handled, the only thing you need to focus on is that if they could do that to him, they can do that to any of us. Now, I know there's white people out there, like, this is the power of white supremacy, that it's got, you believe, it's got white people who are at the bottom of the food chain believing, nah, it's just going to happen to you niggers, or to you migrants, or to you gays, and to you women, you know, but not me. You'll get that one last because you're disposable. You're a useful idiot. But yeah, no. Bottom line is, if they can take a right of another human being just like that, they can do it to us. Now, I know I live in Canada, but I'm thinking about how the United States is an ally of Canada, and they tend to... Look, bottom line, man, injustice to one is injustice to all of us. That's all I'm trying to say. Oh, right. Let me play the PSA. This is what got me here.
It's the same shit they did with George Floyd, Philando Castile, Breonna Taylor, anything. It's because they don't care. They're just intentionally misinterpreting what people are saying because they fucking hate you and they fucking hate minorities. If Kilmer Abrego Garcia was no angel, then Donald Trump is the damn devil. The difference between the two is that one got a trial and then we found out what the fuck he did to women. Now, I'm supposed to believe that because Kilmer Abrego Garcia did XYZ in his past, that means that he's not deserving of a trial. Nobody's making him a martyr because, you know, he's a great person. Nobody said about George Floyd that he's a martyr because he's a great person. No one gives a fuck about the quality of the personality besides the racist people who want to backwardsly justify what they thought already. Regardless of what you think about these individuals, they deserve a trial to determine what they did wrong. And if you can be scooped up with no evidence and get lied about on nightly television about evidence that does not exist to justify you getting put in an essential death camp, then that eliminates protections for everybody in this country, regardless of whether or not fucking Satan incarnate was the nigga who they scooped up and gave no trial to. They know that, but they're intentionally trying to focus on character stuff so you can go, moral, bad, that's a bad person. I don't care what happens to them. Okay, keep that same energy when they come for your ass, too. Fucking hell.
Yep, he said it well. If they can do that to him, they can do that to us. Look, man, I remember when this story was first introduced or I slowly started to pay attention to the story. I was ignoring it. And I nearly fell for the trap of the, well, hold on. His wife filed a restraining order on him. Essentially, he's not the perfect character. Or trying to distract you from the fact that it ain't about him being perfect. It's about the fact that this human being was entitled to speak his piece speak his piece. Before they deported him, he had, according to the rules of the United States, in his constitution and all, he's entitled to speak, to plead his case. At the very least, before they deported him. And right now, these white people are trying to play this whole, like, well, he's a migrant. A migrant killed my family. Therefore, we should basically repeat the same crime they committed with the Japanese internment camps. No, we can't trust any Japanese. We can't trust any. Like, they're not treat them like a human being. It's fucked up, man. Again, I'm going to repeat it. They can do that to him. They can do that to any of us. What's annoying with the United States is how Trump is breaking a bunch of rules, and he's like, what are you going to do about it? Fuck you going to do about it? You going to arrest me? Fuck you. I'm untouchable. But it is what it is. It is what it is. Yeah. All I know is I don't want to hear shit about, I know I'm going to hear it, but I don't want to hear shit about white people denial of white supremacy, about white privilege. Oh, right. The name of the content creator is Jay William. Is this it? Joshua Joseph. Oh, he's got to be Haitian. Joshua Joseph. Big time content creator. At JamPod. Oh, no, I think that's his podcast. Oh, co-host at JamPod. Jay Williams J. 8. He's a known face. I'm talking to him. I'm talking about him because he's just he drops science on you bitches. All right. Let's get to feature thought. Then before we do that, I'm gonna take a quick break. Get my throat settled around. All right. See you in a bit. I got a bone to pick. I don't want you monkey mouth motherfuckers sitting in my thrones again. All right, I'm back. I don't know if you can tell. I think I'm going to make this a trend here. I like reciting verses, like small bits, two bars from a rap song, and then going to welcome or talk about whatever the fuck I want to talk about. Like, I'm back. Like, in this case, I'm going to talk about featured thought. But whatever, man. Shout out to Kendrick for that verse. Hey, I heard Kendrick is touring now. Let me look that up. Kendrick. I'm not going to see him. I don't want to. You know why? I don't modern day hip hop. Because I miss the days when I'm from the old school. And when you go to a rap concert, white people were smart enough not to drop the last thing a white person would do is drop the N-word. Even if it wasn't in a song. But yeah, man. I don't want to get kicked out because... whatever. Okay, so where is this tour I was looking... Oh, whatever. Okay, I'm distracted. Okay, focus. All right, let's go. I said... before I get to the realization I need an elevator pitch, let me try to summarize the trip. Why? Because it's my goddamn podcast. It's my goddamn podcast. All right. So let me give you a quick summary. So I left on Thursday, took the Via Rail train. It was fun. I took the train there. And, fun little comfortable ride, and then got to my hotel. Lucky me, I got upgraded to a, I asked for a king size bed. I got upgraded to a loft, and inside my loft was a jacuzzi. I'm like, holy shit, which I had to look up how to use. And, wish I came prepared, but I ended up not using the jacuzzi. Just because I wasn't sure how to... I mean, I know you got to fill it up with water, and I just didn't have that patience. but it was cool. They upgraded, and I kind of liked that hotel, the location and everything. I'm a great place. I met up with my cousin. And we caught up. We went for breakfast. You know, we're adults where, I remember when he proposed and said, yeah, let's meet for breakfast. I'm like, that's how I know we're adults now. As opposed to, yo, let's meet this kid. Let's meet at the bar, and then we're going to go to a club. We did some adult shit. And it was fun catching up. And I think my biggest thing is we linked up twice that day. First, it was for breakfast. And I remember, because I talked about this in the previous episode, I remember debating on telling him about my podcast and the fact that I'm in therapy. I don't know. I'm very with my family. I'm very secretive about that shit. I think the worst case scenario is having someone say, "Oh, you don't need therapy. You need Jesus." You know, yeah, whatever, man. And what's funny is, I remember like overthinking it. And when I met up with him the second time, because we went from his place to go to the comedy show, and I remember walked in. And I have a clear view of the room he uses to record his music. I should mention that too. He's a musician, and the room he uses to record his shit, to record music, and I'm gonna be arrogant. I'm saying like it kind of reminded me of my office, except with way more expensive equipment. But I had a brief moment of remembering how me and him grew up. I joked about how there was like, you know, we were like childhood friends of the family, you know, kids who slept in the same bed, like kind of relationship type thing, right? And then we grew up, became teenagers, and I had a rap band and that was doing well. And then when we met up, I'm like trying to tell about my rap band, and he's telling me about how, oh yo dude, I'm in an R&B group. And whatever. But it was funny how it's like self-expression. I don't know. Whatever, man. Like something in common, right? Whatever. But when I saw those equipment in his room and seeing that he like stuck to his, he invests in his craft, in his talent. And the thing that we had in common, it was just telling him about my podcast was just natural. It wasn't a sales pitch. It was just like me and him. Hey, I'm in a rap group. I'm in an R&B group. And I'm like, he's like, hey, you know, I mean, I knew he was pursuing music, but it was just a similarity in his watching his studio. And it reminded me of mine. And I just said, yeah, man. I told him about the therapy session. And the thing about it was less, when it came out, one, there was a sense of relief. But there was also a sense of, I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I remember because we were talking about it and he brought up, he says, what, were you worried that I was going to judge you for it? And I was lingering on that question. It was less about being judged. It was more, I mean, yeah, sure, there might have been a concern at the beginning. Like, I see it as protecting myself. There's certain people, certain things about you they don't need to know simply because they can't handle it. Or you're not really friends, whatever, right? But in this particular case, it was like, yeah, no, I didn't really care. I didn't, I'm glad he asked the question because it just had me thinking. But this verse is just how his studio equipment triggered, pressed the button to say, fuck it, tell him about the podcast. And the therapy sessions. But yeah, man, anyways, he was understanding about it. Me too, whatever. No, it was just, that's the one thing that we don't have in common, our separate paths. But, anyway, so from his place, we went to the comedy show and, there was a protest going on, but that's not important, but whatever. We got there. What's beautiful is, we walk to the show. Now, this is the part where I talk about the show, right? I'm going to start. This is like a bit of a review. I'm going to start with what I like the most is. Before I get into like deep thoughts about, let me go on the surface, right, about the show, right? So What I like about the show is, so the comedian I went to see, his name is Redzel Dashington, right? And Montreal is his hometown. And seeing him on stage and the audience, because the audience was just like, the energy was great. The rhythm between these two, like, what's the word? The chemistry was amazing. You can feel, it was like, I feel like, I've never seen Biggie on stage, but I felt like this was the equivalent of watching Biggie in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Nas in Queensbridge. Big Daddy Kane in, okay, I'm getting old, but Kendrick Lamar in Compton. Tupac in Oakland. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, I do it for you, folks. You could tell, like, he was in a group, in an audience. It was love. And some folks take for granted, but that chemistry between the performer and the audience adds to the element. So that's a plus one. The venue was great, was amazing. The place is called the Comedy House. Yeah, Comedy House. Making sure I got the right name. It was Comedy House. I remember taking a picture. Comedy House. Oh, Hog House. Comedy House Comedy? Yeah, Montreal. Jesus Christ. Comedy House, that's what it's called, right? Nice little venue. It was split in half. And I think one part is for the bar section. But they zoned off the section dedicated for comedy. So nice venue. Now, it's important for me to talk about how great the venue is, but the staff too. There, when we first got there, my cousin and I, there was actually a lineup. And so, you know, we were doing, I was a little nervous that there was going to be a bouncers, but yeah, there was a lineup. There was people just waiting in line. And then, and my cousin, you know, because he's one of the locals, one of his friends showed up from outside. And I hear him talking. And then I see him, and the guy he's talking to points at the door, I guess, to say, yeah, just go in. And then he starts walking, and I know better than to ask questions. I just follow along with him, and I'm ready to say, I'm with him, whatever, right? So I just, some of you people are apt to this, right? If you're with your friend, and you're at a club, and he talks to whoever's in charge, you see him or her walking inside, just follow along. Where are we going? Is this how we get in? We didn't pay yet. You know, just walk in. Some people need to get taught that. Anyway, yeah, so we walk in, and it's funny is after we walk in, the people that were in line started to trickle in. Now, it's not that I thought it's because they followed us, but no, it's the person who was like checking tickets finally showed up to the door to let them in. Now, this is the part that's impressive for me. I know this is like some low expectation I'm about to tell you, right? Is that, so we walked in without getting our tickets checked. We sat down and everything. And then the lady who was checking the door finally catches up to us, smiles, like, excuse me, gentlemen. Really polite, smile on their face. Excuse me, gentlemen, can I see your tickets? And we're like, yeah, yeah, cool, whatever, right? Just that politeness. Just that, no, I'm not accusing you of stealing. But you know, in a way I was understanding that, guys, next time wait in line, I'm the person in charge. But she was really polite about it. It's like, she knew we had our tickets. So she scanned our tickets and let us in. But just that grace, that kindness for me is a big deal. I don't know if it's I'm used to going to clubs. I don't know if it's because it's hip-hop, whatever the fuck, man. They find, like, the worst customer service people. Or they find people who are like, I fucking hate black people. Whatever. Or it's, like, their excuse to justify, hey, like, she could have thrown us out. That's what I'm trying to say. But instead, she just, like, gave us grace, smiled, and said, can I see your tickets, gentlemen? And, yeah, we did a scan, and then boop, boop, and whatever, right? And, yeah, to me, that's a big deal, man. Staff, like, kind staff members. It's, I like that. Anyways, so I'm giving you all the surface stuff. So now let me get to the actual show. I enjoyed the show. Wenzel was, like, you know, on point. And I'm just going to be raw honest with it, right? It wasn't as tight as his special that he has on his Patreon page. But not to say quality, but I can tell this is his first night. I was able to tell that this is his first night of his tour with this material. I got a sense that the jokes he was making, like, was fresh out the oven. One part is because he was referring to his notes at one part. And two, and this is the part, I'm not sure if that was intentional, but it had me thinking, there was sometimes, compared to his special, in this one, I can feel, I was able to sense, like, there was a long period between setup and punchline. Setup and punchline, setup and punchline. And it felt like sometimes he was, like, it's not that he was a pro about it. Don't get me wrong. It was just me. That's analyzing. Like, if I had a discussion, if I had an interview with him, it's these things I would ask him. It's like, yo, were you searching for words and things like that? Not like to mere mortals, they would have noticed that. Look, I know I've it's something that I need to practice. Like on this podcast, I'm making 2 points here. On this podcast is when I write a new joke, I still haven't. I know what the punchline is, but I'm still working on the setup process. But for me, when I do it, it's obvious. You'll hear the kind of like the way I'm talking on this thing. Actually, I was realizing that a lot of what I do on this podcast is equivalent to his setups, in a sense that. In his setup is where he's saying some deep shit, some profound shit. Like it's. I mean, there's a humor. You know, there's a joke coming. But sometimes he just says some like profound shit to be like, I might make you emotional, might make you reflect, might make you, it might inspire you to do things. But everything is in that setup, and then he ends with a tight punchline. Like I noticed that formula on this podcast. A lot of what I do is just setup work. I mean, I throw in a few jokes in and there, but it's like the stuff I talk about or the shit I share here, it's like could all be setups to a punchline, which is kind of the intention. But you know what his show reminded me of? It reminded me of, what's that guy's name? What's that comedian's name? Hold on a second. Let me just, comedian... His name is Jared Carmichael. There we go. Jared Carmichael or when Dave Chappelle. Chappelle has one of his comedy skits. There's one where he's talking about Iceberg Slim. Like if you notice, like the it's like there's more, he spends more time on the setup than he does on telling you a story than he does on the actual punchline. I don't know if that makes, whatever. I mean, I know what I'm trying to say, but it's delivering. But whatever, man, that's how I felt like. But, yeah, man. No, overall, that great show, great energy. But I can tell the next shows are going to be better than the last ones. Unless he gets an uncooperative crowd. That's the only thing I could see, like, messing things up. But, with that, if I wasn't so tired, I would have gone to, oh, and also the fact that it's 420, I would have seen him in Ottawa. But whatever, it is what it is. But, yeah, man, I think, this tour has, like, several shows, and I think the people after me are going to get, like he's using every show to, like, improve from on the one before. But, yeah, now... For personal thoughts. Now, personal reflections, not really, because, you know, I think a lot, right? It's not necessarily related to the joke. And I'm finally going to get to the elevator pitch part, right? While he was performing, Renzel, there was, actually, he had an opening act. I forget her name, but seeing her present, it reminded me of when I started out in comedy. And she did it, man. She, like, you know, you're the opening act. You're like, you're the icebreaker. You're the sacrificial lamb. And she handled it, man. She did well. She did her set and everything like that. And it was a great intro and all that. So there was one seeing her perform reminded me of, yes, I think I could do that. I think I could still do it. Yeah, because I remember, before I ended comedy, I was very critical of my own self and critical of the fact that I wasn't performing at a level that I wish I could perform. Like, how come I don't have Dave Chappelle skills? Shit, like, you know, weirdness like that there, man. Sometimes it's just learning to appreciate your journey. That's what I'm watching her perform reminded me of appreciating the journey. Right? Yeah. Second, while Renzel was performing, I had a moment where I was remembered that I was feeling the energy between him and the audience, and I was remembering how I was born in the city of Montreal. Sure, it doesn't feel, I don't have a connection to it except for that place that I go to, that place that's 2 hours away from Ottawa, or that place with all the pretty women. But there was a moment of maybe this is where, maybe fuck Ottawa, man. If you're going to restart, if you're going to reboot your comedy career, do it in this city. And it was like you have permission to do so. I mean, I could have done it with Toronto, but there's something about Montreal. I feel like there's more I need to investigate about this city called Montreal. Who knows? It might be a fluke or it might be a thing, but it was just a yes. It was just to reinforce the idea that, yo, reboot your comedy career for Montreal. Two, when Renzo was going through his setups, it reminded me of a thought that I have of how, because it was a conversation I was having with my cousin, and I was telling him how when I'm with an individual, it's rare that I allow myself to be myself. Like, I usually adjust myself to whoever I'm speaking to. Unless the person I'm speaking to gives me permission. They don't know they're doing it, but there's certain personalities. Some people have personalities. It's like, yo, be yourself. It's okay to be yourselves around me. I won't beat you with a belt. I'm chill. I'm down to earth. But there's certain people who have that personality of just be yourself. But I had a moment of realizing that microphone, like, all right, the last episode was called The Guy Behind the Microphone or The Man Behind the Microphone. And the realization that this mic device allows me to be the version of myself I want to be. Because there's no interruptions. There's, in order for you to get the full spectrum of what I'm saying, you need to hear it all out. Sure, I might say some fucked up shit. I might say something that's weird. But I just need you to hear it out before you, like, respond. Ideally, I want you to laugh, but bonus points if you laugh and leave with something to think about. But there was watching him perform, doing his perform his jokes, reminded me that microphone. That's the amazing thing about that microphone. All I need is one mic. The one thing about that microphone is how it allows you to be whatever version of yourself you want to be. Like, there's a certain freedom that microphone gives you. And I don't care if you think I'm weird. But since it's a comedy show, it's okay if people think you're weird. You know, it's... Anyway, it was just a reminder of the freedom that comes with the microphone. And last but not least, I think... Now, there's jokes that I want to bring up, but I'm not going to spoil it for you, so I'll let you watch the show. But there's a few jokes that, like, really stuck with me and that I laughed harder than everything else. Again, but I won't ruin it for you. Yeah, just watch the show for yourself. But the one thing, I'm not going to spoil it, but the one thing is at the end of the show, like I said, it was a strong energy between the audience and the performer and the audience. And there's a part where he was thanking the audience, talking about, yo, I've been doing this for, I forget how long, he's been doing it for a while, 20X whatever. And the part that struck me the most is how he said, like, how he's been able to, his comedy career, he's been able to do it with this audience. And what he means by this audience, he means this demographic. Now, the audience was predominantly black, right? And I'm going to assume mainly Haitians. Montreal, oui. Okay. Who's your bleu, but they fuck it. So, Haitians. And then there was a table besides. It was like, you know, Latinos and one woman who was mixed race, half black. And like there was a few white people sprinkled around. No, we didn't make them feel uncomfortable, but there was white people around. And I'm sure there was a few, maybe black people who weren't Haitians in there. But what I'm getting at is how he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but the way that I got from it is how, yo, I didn't perform in white clubs. No, when I started in comedy, I was doing white clubs. That's how I got my start with. And I don't resent it. I'm not mad at it. Like, there's a lot of people who, like, gave me the support that I needed, that I credit for how great the skills or my development as a comedian. Because, sure, there's some positive, and then, of course, there's some negative. But I'm focusing on the positive. So I'm grateful for that, right? But I'm also envious that he was able to start his career with a black audience. Like, I'm trying to branch off into a black audience. I think I'm like Jurassic 12. Is that what they were called? J12 or Jurassic 12? Only white people were listening to their music. And I'm like, damn, I need some black people to listen to mine. Yeah, I ended up writing a message to Renzel about that, is how that part, what he was thanking his audience and especially saying how, thanks for your support, how I was able to entertain my chosen demographic. And I was envious of that. I was envious. And I, in a message I sent him, I said, how to me, that's a big deal. Because when I started out in comedy, I started to perform in front of people who either, for the most part, didn't get what the fuck I was talking about, or B, just expected me to, like, tap dance her. It's like, hey, man, cut off that black shit. Stop talking that black shit. You're making us white folks feel bad about ourselves. Stick to some, like, your baby mom's giving you hell. You're not taking care of your kids. You don't have any father. Stick to those jokes. Stick to those safe jokes. You got a big dick. Or you only fuck white with me, you know what I mean? Shit, like, I'm reflecting on this one time where I did the show, and it's kind of contradicting myself here. I remember this one time where I did this show. Yeah, it's gonna be corny, but whatever. I did this, it was a Black History Month show. I was hosting the show, and at the end, I was just thanking the audience, and there's a part that I'm not sure I was able to express, but I did feel in my mind, is I was like, this is middle of February, and there's an audience. It's like a mixed audience, sure, mainly a lot of white people in this audience. But I love the fact that they all laughed. It's like in that moment, I felt like I was staring at an audience that understood me. Okay. Fast forward to later, to the George Floyd era, to what's like, what made me stop comedy is because all of a sudden white faces just became, there's something about that George Floyd era, and the white audience just felt like a bunch of white people who, like, didn't get it, just wanted you to tap dance. And you know, a lot of the jokes that I made were like, I'm like, laugh at my pain, but it was like, I was starting to feel like white people entertain themselves, get off on our pain. Like, they disconnect themselves from our pain. And I hated that I was giving them more shit to laugh at. More, another black person who's not who's not doing well in life. Who's thinking about suicide. Ha ha ha, entertaining. But it also comes back to why it's important for me that my next audience be a black audience. Sure. There's a chance I might end up being like, I know a black comedian who tried to perform in front of a black audience and it didn't work out. because he was making comic book jokes and shit like that. But dude's funny, but it didn't. This particular audience, or it might have been a one-off show. What I'm getting at is, yes, there is such a thing as black comics who did try to perform in front of a black audience and it didn't work out. They just weren't feeling them. It happens. It happens. You got a tough choice to make. Do I stay on the path that I'm on, or do I quit? Whatever. But yeah. Anyways, summarize. Oh my God. Okay. Now, finally, let me get to, so that's the Montreal trip. So let me get to the elevator pitch part of the show. So what made me think about improving my elevator pitch? So after the show was over and, you know, Renzel did what comedians do after the show. He's just like, runs to the back. And then if you want to take a picture with him, shake hands and whatnot, do that. He does that thing. So, so I was in line, and my cousin hasn't joined me yet. Right. And there was these two women in front of me. Right. I should point out these two attractive women in front of me, like distractingly attractive, whatever, right? And actually, he mentioned during his show, it's like, fellas, you guys don't understand. I'm staring at these two women, and I'm distracted by their looks. Anyways, all right? sorry, I'm not trying to make things creepy here, but they were in front of me, so they were next talking to the guy. And so you can tell that, you know, he's having a little moment, right? I'm not saying like there was some groupie shit happening, but I'm sure there was a moment of, yes, that's what I do comedy for. You know, it's like he was enjoying the moment of, they were just like laughing, enjoying each other. I guess they knew each other from somewhere else, but he was joking about how, yeah, you guys were distracting me and all that, right? And then, and finally my cousin shows up. Renzel, the comedian, he recognized them. Say, you two should network, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and then finally, you know, he shakes his hand. So he finally breaks through, shakes his hand, and they start catching up. And then I jump in and go, hey, I'll be black. My point is this. I remember when it was finally my turn to talk to homeboy, and I had a moment of, wow, so much shit I want to say. Because for me, it was only in that moment that I was trying to network. I was trying to say, dude, how can I get down? So it's not a sales pitch, but I was trying to establish and say, yo. Well, I was trying to establish two things. One, I completely forgot that I'm like, oh, this dude's never seen me before. Two, he has no way to associate me to the guy on Instagram who's been messaging him because I've been using my logo. So that's problem number one. Two, I've been using my podcast to interact with them. And three, it's like in that short period of time, I needed to identify myself, make myself known, and also hopefully establish some kind of connections. Hey, maybe we can work in the future. Maybe you could, you know, help me find some opportunities in the city and whatnot. And how can I be on the path that you started on? That's what I was trying to say. But of course, I panicked. I just said, yo, just shook his hand. It was really brief. Now, I got to remind you, those attractive women were still there. So it's like, beat it, brother. He didn't say those words, but I can sense there's nothing I can say I couldn't think of anything that would be like, let me get my eyes off these attractive women and focus on whatever the fuck you got to say, Mr. Ontario. I bring this up, okay, and it was the realization that I need to work on my elevator pitch because I didn't have one. I wasn't trying to sell them on anything, but I was trying to say, good show. How can I get down? I was hoping to leave. Yeah, yo, contact me here. Or at the very least, okay, you're that guy. Oh, you're B Black. Oh, you're the nigga that's been, you know, messaging me. Establish that. But I don't feel like I did that. I ended up messaging him afterwards. But I remember leaving that moment and being like, fuck, disappointed. Like, if I had if I had based my experience in Montreal on that feeling, you'd be hearing like, man, fuck the city, fuck everyone, and fuck. But deep down, I was upset at myself for not having a proper intro. And it reminded me of the last time I saw, because this is where this is important, I saw Rod and Karen in real life in Charlottesville, right? And I remember it was the same scenario. Karen is different. I had time to chat with Karen, but with Rod, it was the same scenario. Is we're all taking pictures, and finally, you know, we go up. It was positive about it. We took pictures together. And I just realized there's so many things I want to say in this particular moment, but there's a lineup of people waiting to take a picture. You're very likely tired. You ain't got time to hear about my pyramid scheme. Hold on, how long are you saving? You know, how much are you saving on? How much you spend on long distance? Cause I got a scam. You know what I mean? I ain't trying to hear that shit. Like you just got like a finite amount of time to be like, yo. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is B. B to the L's. Okay. That's it. I think lesson learned is next time I'm in this situation. I mean, maybe I'm being a little tough on myself here, but because I know that it was a brief moment. Because you could just message them afterwards. There's always that. Because again, there's only so much thing you can do in that finite small amount of time. I'm just speaking of, yeah, but I remember still feeling disappointed that I couldn't control space and time and deliver the exact message I wanted to. That's it. That's where I was going with. This is why this episode is called Elevator Pitch. Looking at the time and I'm nearly done. Okay, so let's wrap this. Let's wrap this baby up. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed recording it. I need to have more experience so I can have stuff to talk about on the podcast. What do I have any other links that's worth talking about? Nothing, man. Check out the other links section in the show notes. Show notes is on the website. Website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Before I end the show, I want to remind you that this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts, and they're protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the red, black, and the red, blue. Rouge et bleu, motherfucker. Okay. I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and black folks who say yes to Big Rube's question, are you an outcast? This episode was rated R and F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Thank you for listening. And remember, please be kind to your favorite podcast. All right. Peace.